Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another series of positional previews. I want to remind everybody that these are brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce and our longtime friends For the Table Restaurant Group. Bud, this is one of the favorite things that we do every year, something that I personally look forward to, and it's as good of an indicator that the season is soon to come as anything that's on my calendar.
Ingram, happy to be doing with you again, man. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going to happen this season. We're going to actually pull some audio maybe or some quotes from last year's positional previews to see what we got right and, importantly, what we got wrong, where we can improve and make some predictions.
Let's get into it. All right, Bud, we turn our focus to the running backs now. Going to look back a little bit at what we had to say in 2016, have kind of a final fanboy goodbye to what was the career of Dalvin Cook, and take a look at what, honestly, I think maybe at least my main theme here, and certainly be interested in hearing what yours is, but I think Florida State has positioned themselves as well as possible to, and it doesn't mean there's not going to be any fall off. It doesn't mean that we're not going to watch a run and think, well, you know, wonder what Dalvin would have done with that. But I think they've positioned themselves in as good a place as possible to absorb the loss of the best running back that they've ever had in school history.
I mean, you nailed it, right? Oh, by the way, not only did you nail it right there, we nailed it last year on the preview. We've been doing all these look backs and, okay, hey, what did we say last year? What we said last year was Dalvin Cook's best player on the team. Dalvin Cook is the best running back in the history of the program. And remember, some people were still kind of in the camp last year of, no, he's not yet, right? Like, oh, he's got to break all the records first. We can say it. We can identify the talent if we know it. Yeah.
We're good with our assessment this one. We're going
to
stick
with it. Yeah, I got decent eyes. I can see it. You can see. Everybody should be able to see. Semantic side. Ingram, I think we got that one right. So this preview is going to be a little bit shorter than some of the previews that we ran long on. And if you're a person who's listening maybe over the weekend and trying to get all caught up on all the preview series, you might appreciate that. So Dalvin Cook last year, 1,765 yards rushing, 513 yards receiving, breaks, I mean, pretty much every school record for a running back ever, and just had a fantastic year, led FSU to the Orange Bowl, balled out in the Orange Bowl, never lost to Miami, never lost to Florida. Great career. Now he's in the NFL with the Vikings, and damn if he didn't save this offense's butt time after time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly true. A guy that bailed you out, a guy that turned more, certainly not the first person to voice this, but a guy who turned more 3-yard losses into 39-yard gains than anybody I've ever seen play football before. Just, man, there were nights, there's times where you look back and it takes a year or it takes a kid or two in the rotation to really look back and appreciate what you had and realize how special somebody was. And there were just nights where Dalvin Cook was running the football against Miami, and it looked like literally, you know, the earth was kicking up underneath his feet, and sometimes it was. But just you knew you're in the presence of greatness, and I don't want to sound, you know, over dramatic or hyperbolic, but just amazing. Amazing what that kid was, and amazing that we were able to watch. You know, we've had a strand here where we've had Florida State's best quarterback, best running back, and all of these kids who are in the upper pantheon of their positions to ever play at this school. But it was never lost on anybody that you were just getting to see one of the more special talents in college football and a guy that we'll remember for a long, long time.
And he did it in big games. I mean, this is going to be tough. Now, Inger, I will say this. It's hard to envision a scenario other than maybe what LSU has with Darius Geis replacing Fournette. It's very hard to think about a way that you could be better prepared to absorb the loss of a player of that caliber than what FSU has done. I mean, they have just stacked this backfield with elite prospect after elite prospect. And I always say, bet on talent, right? And Florida State's backfield is really talented. And let's get into this, man, because I'm actually excited about this. And I'm going to just say here, you will notice a drop-off. But I do not think it's going to be like the Jameis to Golson McGuire drop off. Or I don't even think it'll be like the Jameis to Francois level drop off, right? I don't think it's going to be quite as big of a drop off.
It's going to be interesting because you have these three really interesting components who all kind of complement each other well. In a way, we kind of inadvertently did a running back preview about a week ago or 10 days ago where we started to talk about how Jacques Patrick had kind of taken over the position, and that was a pretty good thing. That just because Cam Akers didn't run in here and immediately turn into your number one, that we both viewed that as a very, very positive development and something that is flattering of these two kids that are already on campus. Akers has done, and I mentioned this earlier, and he, you know, a kid's not always going to have a banner day in his first scrimmage, but by all accounts, this kid has done nothing to make anybody think that he isn't ultimately the product that everybody thinks he can ultimately turn into. Akers is a special, special talent, but so are Rasul and Patrick in their own ways. Akers physically is, in my opinion, by far the most gifted, but all of these three kids have unique attributes, and all three of them, I think, you know, you may lean upon it at various times throughout the season.
They do. So Jacques Patrick is your kind of your battering ram, your bigger guy, who has not always played big, right? I mean, we've said on the show before, the usage patterns to us are like, does Jimbo Fisher even like this guy? And it may have been that Jimbo just was sort of holding back on him and pushing him, right, to become what Jimbo thought he could be, you know, by not giving him carries when FSU was up big in some of the games last year. You look at Dalvin Cook's carry totals last year in some of these games. You know, did he need to take 25 carries against Wake Forest? Right. You know, did he really need 18 carries against Boston College or 28 carries against Syracuse?
Yeah, I remember first guessing that one in particular.
I mean, that was just, yeah, like we can't give somebody else the ball. But I think part of that was not wanting to reward Jacques Patrick before he showed that he would actually run hard. And eventually Patrick, you know, got some carries, but not a whole lot. I think this year is the first time where I've really felt like maybe the tide has changed. Maybe Jimbo does like Jacques, and maybe Jacques is a little closer to where they want him to be. I've been told that he's been pretty good over there in practice, so that's encouraging. He's all, you know, is he going to keep dancing? I don't know, but I do know he's been running a little bit more physical, which is encouraging.
Mm-hmm. He had the confusing thing for me anyway about last year was that he had cleaned some of the stuff up, a nice chunk of it. He was a hell of a back. If you remember the performance that he had against USF in particular, stands out in my mind. But in the in the early part of the year when we were a little concerned about the way and the manner in which Dalvin Cook was running, when we finally saw that Dalvin Cook reemerge, I remember a comment that we made. I don't remember the exact game that it was, but we thought in large part it might have been to the way that because Jacques Patrick was running as hard as he was and had made some of the modifications in his game that people had requested of him. And by people, I mean Jimbo Fisher. So that made the kind of the conundrum all the more hard to understand why his carries and his opportunities had such a negative trend throughout the year. So Patrick is a man, like you said, there were some legitimate concerns with either maybe he didn't like him, maybe ultimately he just didn't like that running style. He was, fixated with the guy who changes the scoreboard on one play. But by all accounts, Patrick's carved out, at least going into the year, this number one spot. And a lot of that's a byproduct of his body transformation that you mentioned, but also a continued adaption of the mentality and the running style that's been requested of him.
Yeah, and I know he battled a little bit of injury last year, but man, he only had 10 carries or more in two games last year. Two games. And here's his other game totals: 5, 5, 7, 2, 3, 2, 0, 1, 4, 1, and 1. Man,
that's the trajectory I was referring to.
You know,
hard to make sense of.
Yeah, I don't know. Like to me, it's just kind of, he got 5 carries against Charleston Southern. Dalvin Cook got 11. I would treat that like a preseason game. I would say, you know what? Maybe. But now, granted, Dalvin had the issue going on where he was probably a little more shoulder injured and perhaps mental early on last year. I'm excited that Jacques Patrick showed up in shape. I think he's going to do a lot better numbers this year than he did last year. Last year, 61 carries, 350 yards. He's also a guy who I think you can count on in pass protection. He's a big body. He can absorb a blow. He can deliver a blow. And he's always caught the football pretty well. He's not a burner, though. Now, he is a what we would call a momentum runner, right? He's not quick. He's actually – the top end speed is not terrible, but he doesn't reach it necessarily all that quickly, which means he's going to need the line to hold blocks longer than he did for Dalvin. We spoke about the offensive line in the last preview episodes. If you haven't caught that yet, please do make sure to go back and catch that up. But this is going to be a little bit different, and you do have to call plays slightly different, I think, for Patrick than you did for Cook, which is probably pretty obvious. But, man, I've been hearing good things about him in practice. I want to believe. I really do.
I think he's given you reason to believe, both in just his appearance and what he's done in the past. Now, a guy that we're going to have a little bit more of a leap of faith is a cheesy term, but a guy that we're going to have to both go off what we've seen in high school and some of the buzz that's consistently surrounded this kid since the day he stepped on campus, and a head coach that's gone out of his way to mention this guy in every conversation that surrounds the running backs. Amir Rasul looks to be in a place to, you know, to have some significant carries and very much be a large component of what goes on in the running back in the backfield in general. But a guy who's always had has kind of been enamored, or has always kind of enamored the head coach, and a guy who looks to very much be your number two right now going into Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, he's done some great things in practice. I heard he broke off a big-time run in the scrimmage against the first-team defense. And Rasul is a complete 180 from Patrick as a player, right? Now, I'm not saying he's not tough. I'm not saying he's not physical, but he is a burner. He is your guy. Like, if I had to take one guy off this running back unit and put him on a track, it's Rasul. Rasul has the true elite top-end speed, the home run hitter type. You know, can he run between the tackles is going to be the question. You know, does he understand all the plays? Can he block if called upon? You, if you can't block, you got to be so damn good in order to justify putting you out there. You know, all those type of things. Can he catch? Is he actually, you know, that people assume that these third down back types can catch, but at the same time, that's not always a given. But man, I've been hearing really good things about him too, and this is kind of one of the reasons why I'm confident Florida State can still have an elite level backfield even without Dalvin Cook. And I'm hesitant to use the word replace, because replace sort of, you know, in my mind, you know, something breaks, you replace it, right? And then you just keep on ticking. I think FSU's offense will keep on ticking, but at the same time, man, I don't know about replacing him one for one. But with this three-headed monster here, Amir Rasul being able to hit some home runs, I think it'd be a great change of pace for Patrick, and I'm excited about this. I want to see what this guy can do finally healthy. He's never really been healthy for a consistent stretch of time on campus.
Bud, we've referenced him a second ago when talking with Jacques Patrick, and a guy that would always be in the mix from the moment that it became apparent he was going to choose to attend school in Tallahassee. Cam Akers, as much hype as an incoming running back that I can remember probably since Travis Minor, maybe Nick Maddox, something like that. But a guy that at some point in the year wouldn't shock anybody if he ultimately becomes your number one. But at this point, looks like your third option. But again, I think that's as good of a development as you could have. And by all accounts, Akers might not have had the best first scrimmage, but other than that, has been everything that people could have hoped for, and has positioned himself to be a consumer of snaps from day one.
I still think he's going to be the number one back on this team at some point this year. Just because I think that level of talent is something that I'm just not convinced the other two guys have. Now, have they had as good or better of a camp than he's had? Yeah, I think so. But Cam Akers was a five-star and, you know, arguably the number one player in the country on some services for a reason. Just the combination of speed, quickness, agility, and power, and just a physically mature body is just rare. And that's why everybody went all out to get the guy, and Florida State won. You know, they had a very unique set of circumstances. They had a great cohesive plan. Hey, there's a good chance you can be the starter. I think that, you know, as long as you come in and work hard, and I think he has come in and work hard, and I think he will end up your starter at some point this year. Will it be for game one? I'm not as convinced now as I was, you know, maybe back in the spring, but it's hard for me to say, okay, we saw what he did in the spring. He was very impressive. You know, that level of burst and whatnot. I don't get to watch practice, but I do have guys who do, and they've told me, hey, you know, all of the backs have been really good. I think that's why I'm kind of really high on this unit, because we know Akers' talent level. So if he's not the clear-cut number one, and you said this, to me that means that what's more likely, that Akers has taken a step back in fall camp, or that the other two guys have raised their game? To me, it's probably that the other two guys have raised their game. I know Akers may have missed some holes in the first scrimmage or whatever that was, but man, I like this kid a ton. He works hard. He's a beast physically. Just the only question is kind of the feel for the offense, right? He was a quarterback in high school. He's never really taken handoffs. He's never really played the running back position. How quickly can he do that to pick up all the plays he needed to pick up? But I think he's a contributor day one.
But as we transition away from a really solid three-headed monster at running back, a solid trio of backs, it's worth taking a quick moment to mention the trio of restaurants that make this podcast popular and remind people exactly as to where they are physically located. As maybe we've done a good job at times as to mentioning that Madison Social is located there in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium. But in fact, all three of the wonderful options of the For the Table restaurant group, it's almost like a little campus there, and they're all very much collectively located.
Ingram, you are so smooth. Are you kidding me? A three-headed monster running back, three-headed monster of restaurants. That is brilliant. That's why they pay us the big bucks. Madison Social is right there, like you said. Central is a great Italian concept. Good for date night as well. And then also Township, which is a really awesome beer hall. And when they announce their next taps, I know we're going to have to draft the drafts and go back and forth on that. So look for that fun feature coming soon, and we'll sort of solicit some reader input or some listener input for the show. Let's talk about fullback, man, because tonight, as we're recording this, Freddie Stevenson caught a nice little bootleg pass, I believe, for the Bears. So now Florida State is without him. They have a new fullback.
Man, again, don't want to get sidetracked with some of the glory days there, but Freddie Stevenson, you'll be missed, man. One of my favorite fullbacks to play at Florida State in a long, long time. Love to see that kid have success on Sundays, and the fact that he's getting some traction in the league only makes me happy. But more likely than not, Jonathan Vickers is the guy that's going to have the first chance to take over Stevens' role, a local kid from Tallahassee, a guy that we've always been pretty excited about what he brought to the position. Very athletic, at times could play some tailback if you needed him to. But this, at least at this point, looks like the guy that will be your starter moving into the year.
So my question here is physical, right? Can Vickers be physical enough to warrant having him on the field a lot? Because we know he can catch. We know that he was in the running back mix as far as all the backups at some point. Look, he's not as talented of a running back as these other guys, and thus, hey, moving to fullback presents the best opportunity to play more. Can he be physical? I mean, Stevenson bulked up and was a better blocker last year. Can Vickers be physical enough to be an effective blocker? Or does it make more sense for Florida State to run more two tight end packages or more 11 personnel with just one running back and one tight end on the field and three receivers, or heck, even more of the pony package, which is two true tailbacks. If Vickers is not physical enough and not big enough and not effective enough as a blocker, and I'm not saying I've heard that, I'm just looking at him, that's kind of one of my immediate thoughts, I'd advocate going more pony package. I mean, put two guys on the field who have the chance to score, who have the chance to really threaten a defense with their playmaking ability, be it with their power or with their speed. Get creative. Don't just line up in the eye if your fullback's not an asset. And it's going to be up to Vickers to prove that he can be a really good fullback.
Yeah, longtime listeners of the podcast will know I've been a historical proponent of the pony package, and you just piqued my interest bringing that back up now here, bud. We'd love to see that, and if it doesn't, if you don't have a kid that's immediately ready to step in to assume the responsibility and the physicality that's required of that position, and particularly required some of the things that they asked for him in this offense, would be exciting to see what they do if they have to kind of game plan around that. Now, obviously, I hope that Vickers is able to assume that role and play with what will be necessary to succeed, but it does kind of have a little bit of an intriguing option as to what the fallout would be and some of the other pieces that might make their way into the field.
And look, we did not name it the pony package, by the way. That's actually something that FSU calls it, kind of like on defense when they're in green or blue or yellow. It's right. They have kind of like names for stuff, not code words. Like, it's not a state secret. They actually say it on the TV show. But pony package is what they call two running backs. So, like, when a fullback's not in the game.
We talked about Akers, obviously, Bud, but, man, if you're going to be as optimistic about this unit as we are and excited about it, a reason for that excitement is the two freshmen that you have, really, really impressive players that have both received some pretty positive feedback. I'm not saying that everything's been great since the first practice, but both of these guys, people in Tallahassee think have a real legitimate future in front of them. And it's guys that we were excited about when we talked about this before we hit record tonight. It's guys that we were excited about 4 months ago. It's some of these guys we've been excited about for more than a year. I mean, they're significant players here. And part of the embarrassment of riches that exists at the tailback position is because of the three freshmen that you have on the roster, one of which we've already talked about, the two that we'll talk about now.
Man, I sure hope Phil Jackson does not have the term three-headed monster copyrighted like he does three-peat, because – you know, we got the Madso Central Township three-headed
monster.
Was that
Phil Jackson or
it wasn't.
Or I thought it was Pat Riley.
Maybe it was Pat Riley.
Former Nick Miami Heat executive.
Yeah, I don't watch enough NBA. I watch it when it comes to playoff time. Otherwise, I'm really not into it, especially after the guys stopped having the really awesome draft day suits with like 11 buttons. That was cool back in the day.
Yes, that was cool back in the day. You'd see some – see some hella interesting suits back in the
day. Those were solid, man. So we got the three-headed monster that sponsors us with the restaurant. We got the three-headed monster with Patrick, Rasul, and Akers. But if Akers can play for two three-headed monsters, I mean, we can discuss that Florida State's freshman trio could also be a legitimate three-headed monster. I mean, they signed three of the top, like, eight running backs in the country last year. So Quandre mm-hmm. White is a beast. Kalon LeBourn is also a beast, man. I mean, those guys can really play. They all have kind of unique different skill sets. White is probably the biggest, toughest runner of the three, a guy with just great leg drive. As he continues to develop his upper body, I think he's going to be a real physical beast and asset for this offense. He also catches the ball really well. And that's a kind of a hallmark of a lot of these backs, man. Most of these guys can really catch. Akers has not done it a whole lot in games, obviously, because he's not throwing himself the ball, being that he was a quarterback. But these other guys, you know, Kalon can catch too, and man, I got to say, I like both these guys a whole lot. Now, LeBourn is a little – and by the way, I'm having a little trouble calling him LeBourn. I always called him LeBourn. Apparently, it is LeBourn, which he never corrected me when we were talking on the recruiting trail. So, but LeBourn is a little shiftier, but he's not skinny. I mean, he has a thick lower half as well, can drive through arm tackles, and there's just so many teams in the country I really believe Florida State's fourth and fifth running backs – would start for, even as true freshmen. I mean, those guys just have the goods.
Yeah. LeBourn looks like kind of like a rocked up Chris Thompson. Not that Thompson was a small guy by means, but he almost looks like a Thompson with an extra 10 pounds on him or something like that. Just a really interesting prospect. I don't know how much we'll get to see of him this year, but a guy that you can have some real excitement for. And if maybe – you know, maybe this is a little bit of a transition time from what Florida State's done historically to transfer more to a situation where they try to utilize three guys. Look, you know, I've mentioned this many, many times, but part of the dividend, if you will, of having one of these transition or part of these having one of these kind of transcendent talents, these guys that are unique program, you know, will forever be remembered in the echelons of your program, is that you get to play that card on the recruiting trail for a while. You get to go after kids and maybe pique their interest at a level that you wouldn't. So, you know, the immediate dividends from Dalvin, I think, are very much tied in the class that you just had. But if you can start to sell kids that you can feature three backs, then maybe you continue to recruit at a high level like this, and that's something that you can implement more moving forward. But it's certainly – you know, even looking forward to next year and the year following, you've put yourself at a place here at running back that you will not be void of talent absent some kind of major strings of, you know, concentrated injuries or dismissals or anything else like that.
They're loaded, man. They got to find the right mix. All right, let's play a little over-under game here. I don't think we have this on the show notes, but, you know, we forgot to talk about Ryan Green.
We did.
Ryan Green, you know, loves Florida State. Going to get his degree, maybe multiple degrees from Florida State. Never caused any problems at Florida State. Works hard, you know, did not stay super healthy through no fault of his own, really, through part of his career, you know, here, which I think probably hindered his development, maybe in place on the roster. And it's just tough, man. It's dog eat dog, and there's just more talented guys ahead of him. But I don't think he's a guy that they need to necessarily, you know, purge from the roster. I think he's probably an asset to have around as an older guy. A lot of people would say, hey, why wouldn't a guy like that transfer, you know, to go play for another program? And that's, I can't answer that. You know, maybe he just likes Florida State better than he likes going to play somewhere else, or maybe he almost has to believe that he can still contribute and play. Jimbo Fisher has not been mentioned to him a whole lot recently, but maybe they'll find a way to work him into the game plan some. He's another guy who I really believe, if he was at another school, would be playing a whole lot. Florida State's backfield is just that loaded.
Those are my sentiments on Green. No reason to prolong the experience of this podcast. A good kid, no problem with him, good around the locker room. Just doesn't appear as though we'll see a whole lot of him from the field.
All right, so here's my question. Does any single running back exceed 175 carries? Now, for context, last year, Dalvin had 288.
Mm-hmm.
The next closest guy was 61. Previous year, Dalvin had 229. Next closest guy, 63. The previous year before that, 170 was the high by Dalvin, and Carlos had 150. The year before that, Devonta Freeman had 173, and Carlos had 91. Wilder Jr. had 81.
Can I get Carlos's carries from the year before that? I'm sorry.
Sure. So Carlos in 2014, Carlos had 150. Dalvin had 170. In 2013. Carlos had 91, Wilder Jr. had 81, Ryan Green had 33, and Devontae had 173.
Wow. Okay. So that's the most.
So 175 seems.
And you set the number at 175?
175. Do you think anybody will have 175? And if so, who?
Yeah, I think it's a good number, and I think the who is a good conversation. I would say that I'm going to take the under there, and the two would be Patrick or Akers, in my opinion. I think Patrick is your leading carrier at the end of the year.
I think that's possible. I may still go Akers just mm-hmm. because I feel like I think Jimbo might miss having a home run hitter.
Yeah, very possible, especially if he's actually hitting home runs too. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I'm also going to take the under. I don't think anybody will have 175. It wouldn't shock me if somebody gets to that like 140 or 150, but I think when you have this much talent and nobody necessarily all that proven, that he will rotate them some. Although, you know, the idea that Jimbo runs a true committee is not necessarily true. It's a bit overblown. We discussed this, probably in the May episode, I think, or a June episode. You remember talking about that? Like the percentages we broke down?
Yeah. And how much of a, you know, look, it's just rare that you have this long of a track record of a guy at a particular school that you can look back and do that. But yeah, from a statistical standpoint, and that's what made that one year stand out so much. I think you said 2013 with the how much it was dispersed at the same time. There were so many blowouts in that year that you almost had to have rotation at running back. But that was certainly the exception to the norm.
All right, man. You got anything else? I think that's a pretty good rundown on a position that folks should be really excited about.
As optimistic as a unit as we're probably going to profile, maybe the secondary as well, but we'll reach that point of conversation when we get there. Want to always thank our sponsors, Louisiana Hot Sauce, Madison Social, and all the entities of the For the Table Restaurant Group that have been with us since day one. Want to always ask that if you haven't done it, if you could take the 3 minutes required to leave us an iTunes review. It is a disproportionate important factor in the podcast market. It's kind of silly, but it is what it is. And if you have 3 minutes to give us, it's the best way to support the podcast and is always appreciated by us. So, Bud, for that, we'll put a bow on the running back preview and look forward to talking to you soon.